Autrice primée et reconnue aux Pays-Bas, Anna Barwoet s'est traduite pour la première fois en France avec Les choses que nous avons vues. Publiée aux éditions Le Bruit du Monde et traduite par Noël Michel, elle s'illustre par un style singulier, vif et délicat à la fois, et un regard sans concession sur l'époque dans laquelle nous vivons. Les choses que nous avons vues parlent de ce que vivent les modérateurs et modératrices de contenu, ces personnes chargées d'évaluer si les images, propos et vidéos signalées sur les réseaux sociaux sont à bannir ou non. À l'avocat qui lui propose de se joindre à ses anciens collègues pour une action en justice contre leur employeur, Kayley, la narratrice, répond ce texte. Une lettre de mise au point sur ce qui l'a réellement traumatisée pendant cet emploi précaire mais nécessaire. Au fil de son témoignage, l'on découvre que ce ne sont pas tant les images que leur effet, pas tant la violence visible que celle sournoise qui finit par envahir le quotidien. Lorsque l'on baigne dans l'abjection et la violence, il est difficile de s'en sortir indemne, difficile de pas voir ses propres principes fondre lentement. Sous les questions sociétales profondes, comme notre rapport aux réseaux sociaux, à la toxicité qui les imbibe, émerge une autre question, celle de notre rapport à l'intime, aux limites que l'on érige et qui glissent parfois insidieusement, celle de la norme, de ce qui est normal ou non. Habile, Anna Barwoet joue sur les genres littéraires, alterne les ambiances avec aisance et confronte ses lecteurs et lectrices au monde, à ses paradoxes et ses chausse-trappes dans lesquelles il est si aisé de se perdre. Mais place maintenant à un moment d'échange avec Anna Barwoet autour de son univers personnel, du roman en lui-même et de son regard sur le monde. Son roman, pour rappel, « Les choses que nous avons vues », traduit du néerlandais par Noël Michel aux éditions Le Bruit du Monde. So, hello, Anna. Thank you for this interview for Bookalicious Media.
Thank you for having me.
This is your first novel translated into French. We French readers discover you. And could you tell us a little bit more about your writing, the genres you write, the way you write?
I'm think in the Netherlands, I'm pretty well known for my speculative fiction. So that's fiction inspired by fantasy tropes, but still very much grounded in realism. So I wrote 7 novels about a lot of different subjects. But this first book to be translated into French, so in Dutch is called What We Saw, The Things We Saw. And in French is Quelques... What's the title again?
It's Les choses. So it's really close.
Well, it's a little different from my previous work because it's even more grounded in realism. It's not speculative at all. It's based on a lot of research about the main topic we were probably going to talk about, content moderating. So it's a little different from what I did before. So it's a little strange that this is my first novel to come out in French now, because it's kind of a new me, I guess.
Yes, it's not very the usual and the well-known you in that you are in the Netherlands.
Well, I think it's very me, because there's a lot of themes I'm interested in that are in all my novels. For instance, the question, what is normal? Who decides what's normal? And what if we challenge the norm? That's part of all my books, I think. And it's also a very important theme in this book. But it's almost documentary-like in the sense that there's no fantasy tropes, there's no science fiction. It's just, it's written very plainly.
It's a realism, modern realism book,
yeah,
actually.
I think that's a good name for it if we're talking about genres.
And how would you describe quickly the contemporary Dutch literature and your style inside it? Are you really in the mood of the Dutch literature, a little bit
different? Okay, so that's a hard question, because there's a lot of cool stuff going on, I think, right now in Dutch literature. So there's a cliche out there right now that says that, you know, young writers, if you're a writer, you're young till you're 60, right? So I'm 38 right now and they consider me to be young. I don't find myself to be young at all, but I'll take it. So there's this cliche out there that young writers do a lot of autofiction. So autobiographical fiction that is based on their own lives. So in that sense, I differ from that because I don't do that. But on the other hand, I think the cliche is not completely correct. I mean, there's so many great writers out there right now making amazing stuff, but on the other hand, there is some there is a lot of autofiction out there right now. How is that in France? Is that a genre that is big also among young writers?
Yes, it is still. It has been with older writers, and it is still very, very practiced and written by younger writers. It's really still, I think, the most written genre in France, even if it starts to be a little bit less fashionable style. This last 10 or 15 years, it was really the main one.
Ah, interesting. Well, I think there's a lot of people trying new stuff right now in the Netherlands. There's a lot of other people trying science fiction, like novels. I'm thinking about the debuts that were coming out. Well, it's very different. But I think that if you're a foreign reader or a French reader and you read like 10 Dutch novels written by contemporary authors, you'll probably see more similarities than I will see, because I'm blind to what's normal, I guess. You don't see it if you're in it.
Yes, you describe yourself as really into this current, but also a little bit aside with your research of your mix of genres and your research of strong theme around normality.
Yeah, I'm not inside the trend at all. Mm. I don't do auto-bio fiction. So I'm kind of known for being outside the trend, but I do like the trend. I love reading those books.
And you talked a bit about science fiction and more like fantasy genres. Are they kind of normal in Netherlands? Because in France, for example, it's considered as a lower genre. It's not like great literature.
Okay, so the same here. But this is hard to explain, but you have genre literature and then you have like literature, and I'm on the literature side, but I borrow from the genre. So I don't write like genre literature per se, but I try to borrow those tropes and images and narrative structures, and I put them into literature that is about more social topics or stuff like that. For instance, I wrote a book about chronic illness called Welcome in the World of the Sick. And then on the one hand, it's a very realistic account of a guy who gets chronically ill. And then on the other hand, there's a fantasy-like part where Susan Sontag is still alive and she's leading him through this Alice in Wonderland-like country. And I borrowed from narrative structures that are used in games, that are used in major science fiction movies like Star Wars. So I like to just imply that, but I'm still not in... I'm not in the fantasy genre. So I think in the Netherlands, it's the same as in France. We don't consider the genre literature to be high literature. So it's very separated here also, I think. And I think it's different in like the English countries, like in America and the UK. You also see like reviews that are about fantasy novels or stuff like that. You'll see reviews for those novels in the major newspapers. And I think it's different here. I'm not sure if that says anything about the quality of our genre literature. I'm not sure about that. I don't read a lot of the genre literature. I'm more inspired by movies and television series, old stuff like that. But I think it's the same here.
Okay. Now, it's a very interesting way, yes, to as you described, to be balanced between the big literature and use the genre and create a unique mix of writing.
I try to.
And do you have writing secrets? How do you build a text structure? Maybe we can take the example of your last book. Your way of working.
So I think there's broadly maybe two types of writers. There's the type of writer that just starts with a scene or an idea or a feel or a character and just builds upon that. And then there's the type of writer who structures first, who uses an outline. And I'm that second type of writer. So I'm using an outline. I need to know where I'm going. I always make a treatment before I start writing a book. So a treatment is a term that is mainly used in the movie industry, but I just write, you know, what will happen in the book in a very childish way. I will just go like, and then, and that will be around 5 pages long, I think. And I need that before I start writing. And of course, a lot of things will change along the way because, you know, a book is always more than those 5 pages. And I will differ from the path that I've chosen in the beginning because sometimes things just don't work out. But I do need that before I start. And I always say, I think you write the way you are. And what I mean by that is that I think you write according to your character. So I'm a control freak. I always want to know what I'm doing, where I'm going, what my day is going to look like. Well, my days look the same mostly. So that kind of fits with the way I write stuff. And then when you're more like a go-lucky kind of type, you might write differently. So there, I don't think there's one good way, but I like to start bit the outline.
Yes, it's your way. Let's not say it's a good or bad way, but it's your way and it seems
it's
to work.
It's my way. It works for me, definitely. Yeah, I was talking to a writer friend of mine and we were wondering what it would be like if we switch the ways we work. Like, what if she would just make an outline and she never does that? What if she would do that? And what if I just start? That would be a funny experiment, but we never went about. We didn't really want to do that, I guess.
Yeah, it sounds like the creative writing exercise that we may have in classes or to train and find something different.
Yeah, that would be a great exercise.
And what made you feel like writing about content moderators? It's a very contemporary theme. How did it come to your mind that it was a literary subject?
Yeah, well, I think about 4 years ago, around 2018, I first read about content moderating. This was an article in a Dutch newspaper about a Dutch content moderator who had worked in Berlin for a subcontractor. So that's a call center that was hired by Facebook in the end. So you must imagine these content moderators, they don't work directly for the big, or mostly they don't work directly for the big tech companies, but they're hired by the subcontractors. And well, the question that drew me into the article was very sensational, actually. I was just wondering what did they see? You know, what did this guy see? What do these content moderators see all day? And it's kind of a banal question at the end of the day, but, you know, very often it is the frame that is used by mainstream media whenever they write about this topic. But when I read more about this topic of content moderators, I found there were a lot of other themes that were very interesting to me. So before we were talking about this question that, you know, echoes in all my books, what is normal and who decides? That is very applicable, I think, to content moderating, in the sense that these content moderators need to navigate through all these different planes of morality. On the one hand, they need to check if content that is flagged as inappropriate by users like you or me, if that needs to be removed according to their moderator guidelines. So you have those guidelines that are kind of all made up by the tech companies for commercial reasons. That's one plane of morality they need to navigate. And then on the other side, of course, they have their own opinions about what's right and what's real. And those opinions get influenced by the things they see, but also by the people they love and by the people they work with. So I thought that was actually a very interesting metaphor almost for the way we as citizens navigate the world. You know, we are content moderators of our own lives in a way, in a sense that we're constantly asking ourselves, what do we think is right? What do we think is real? I thought that was such a great theme.
And you just talked about the metaphoric aspect of content moderation, but you write with many metaphors in your, at least in this book. It's like a signature. Is it like a signature? Is it especially in this book? And how do you balance your metaphors not to be too much?
Ah, that's a good question. Well, balancing it, I kind of do it by intuition, I guess. And it's funny you say so. This is an example, I think, while we were just talking about it, you know, when you're in a tradition, you know, a tradition of Dutch literature, you don't know what exactly your place is. Because in the Netherlands, my metaphors are perceived as pretty plain. So they are perceived as, well, not bad, but plain, not so elaborate, let's say it like that. So it's funny that you should say that there are a lot. So maybe there are a lot, but I guess there's Dutch authors that had even more elaborate metaphors. How do I balance them? I don't know. Sometimes it's just as simple as, oh, I feel like a metaphor right here, and then 5 sentences later, I feel like it again, and then I read it, and then I'm like, no, not 2 metaphors, scrap one.
Yes, because you use them at the same time. Sometimes they are very funny, and they bring just like a little funny twist in a little bit difficult or harsh page, or sometimes really to express. So it's funny that some of the Dutch writers would think you are, well, not that good. And
no, they don't say they're not good, but they say they're plain. Well, maybe plain is not the good word, but they're not dressed.
I see.
They're good, but they're simple. That's how they're perceived then. But I think, you know, with the metaphors in this book particularly, I thought it was very important that they would fit my main character. And my main character is Kaylee, a 20-something queer woman who is hiding something and who is very tough, or claims to be very tough at the least. So with all the metaphors, I made sure that they were really fit for her, so they couldn't be too elaborate, because they have to, you know, fit her world and her worldview. So yes, that's why they're sometimes a little funny, I think.
Because it really fits the way the character is structured, thinks and interacts, is really like a documentary, not like fiction.
So I guess it would be weird to make them too poetic. I think that's the word I was looking for.
So, and you talked about the way you play with genres, how you work between both or multiple genres. And it's kind of a good example, because this book almost starts like a crime novel.
Then yes. Yes.
Into a love story, but with always something quite disturbing with this. People changing their mind, and is this book a good example of the way you balance between genres in your writing?
Well, maybe, because I consider this book to be just, you know, literary fiction, very simple like that. But if you put it that way, I mean, definitely, I do borrow like storytell methods from thrillers, I guess. Well, I don't read thrillers, but like I said, I told you, one of my main sources of inspiration is television series, like the, you know, all kind of television series. So I definitely use tools and storytelling techniques from those other genres also for this book. Yeah.
And you also write screenplays, don't you, or theater? I saw on your bio.
Yeah, I did. But, well, I wrote one screenplay, so it's not my background. My background is literature, and I studied media and culture, actually. So my background is also movies and televisions, but I'm not, I didn't study to write screenplays. So I did it once, and maybe I'll do it again. But one of the disadvantages of writing screenplays or writing plays is that you need to work together. And I wouldn't say I'm not good at that, but I prefer to do things myself. And I think it's faster when you do it yourself. So I do love, I love screenwriting, but you have to wait for other people, and I don't want to wait sometimes.
Maybe yes, that's why you're a writer and not a screenwriter, if you prefer.
It is. Yes, it's definitely.
Is everything you describe, the way moderators work, or everything they see, real? How did you investigate about this topic?
Yeah, so I read and saw a lot about this topic. I tried to read every book that was available. I think I failed at that, but I did read a lot of books, memoirs, social studies, articles, of course. There's a lot on YouTube. There's a lot of interviews on YouTube. There's documentaries, and some of them I named in the back of the book because I found it very important, of course, to give credit where credit is due, because I wanted to make it really realistic. But then on the other hand, I didn't want to base the story on one specific company. So that was a very fine line. But most of the things in the book either happened or could have happened. Like, for example, there's a scene in the book where a group of content moderators look outside and they see someone on the roof. Mm. And because they've seen so much images of people standing on the roof gone wrong, they assume that that person will jump. And in the book, it's a pretty elaborated scene. And it's also about the function of the scene is to show how these people become friends and also how they become traumatized. So there's a lot of different functions from that one scene. But I actually got that from an article by this great journalist called Casey Newton that was on The Verge. And it was only, I think, three sentences. Well, the article was pretty elaborate, but the scene about the guy on the roof was only three sentences long. And I elaborated upon that with characters that were completely made up, of course. So yeah, it's based on true events, I guess. But then again, all the characters are fiction.
And you also talk about the way ideological things, and such as conspiracy, anti-Semitism, kind of go into everybody's mind, even if they don't want. And do you think literature is a way to highlight how things go wrong in the world around us? Do you think it can
warn? Well, it's a way. No, I don't like it when literature is a warning. I mean, people are not stupid. People can read the news. People don't need to be warned, I think. But of course, it is a way to, you know, show a different angle on very complicated topics, and to make people understand what's going on in the minds of other people. So to kind of make people empathize, I guess, which is also kind of a cliche, you know. So I think literature doesn't need to be anything. It doesn't has to be anything. If someone wants to write about their bathroom, you know, an entire novel, they can. So, but yeah, I think, of course, everything can be a topic. So why not these major problems as conspiracy theory or the sense that we don't know what's real anymore? Yeah, everything could be literature, but I don't like to tell the people, you know, one thing. So there's not, I like to make the people think, but I don't want to tell them, oh, social media is bad or conspiracy theories are crazy or stuff like that. I never want to do that. I just want to maybe invite them to zoom out, you know, to question the things around them. But I like to ask questions more than answer them, because some questions, there is just no answer to them. And that's where literature comes in.
Hmm. Yes, you're not a message writer. You just show what's going on around, and just like,
yeah, and what I find interesting. Yeah, I need to find it interesting. You know, with the content moderators, I was just so intrigued by this world, and I had so many questions, like, do these people become friends on the moderating floor? You know, another thing I'm really interested in is community and the sense of belonging, and why do you need that? So a book always comes from my own fascinations and questions. That's where it starts, and it doesn't start with me thinking, oh, I want to tell you something, or you need to know this or that. I want to tell myself something, and then if other people like it too, I'm really happy.
And how, especially still on this topic, how did you find the right distance, not you to be overwhelmed, but what you were writing about and what you were investigating at first about? Is it because you just write about a topic that interests you?
Yes. And also because I know I'm going to write about it. So I was telling you, I work with an outline. So I did some research first. I read some articles and books about the content moderators. And then based on that, I did an outline. And then the rest of my research I did to fit into that outline. So okay. I knew what information I needed. So sometimes I just write a scene and then there might be a fact missing and I'll just put a little X on the place that fact is missing. And then later I'll just look it up. And then I found that, you know, a lot of the documentaries and books on content moderators, they're not about, you know, summing up all these horrible images. So it wasn't like I had to read about those horrible images every day or see those horrible images. They're very modest, usually, about the description. So every article will have like three examples that I could use or not use. So in that sense, the violence wasn't as overwhelming as some people think. Of course, I didn't see all the images. I just read about them. And also in the back of my mind, I was wondering, oh, what can I use for my book? So I was a filter in that sense. I just thought it was, like you said, mainly interesting, more so than overwhelming, maybe. Because also I'm of course looking at it with the question, oh, how can I make a narrative out of this? Where would my characters fit into this? So kind of distracted that way. And maybe that's a coping mechanism also. You know, the book is a lot about coping mechanisms, and maybe this was my coping mechanism, asking myself, oh, how can I make a narrative out of this? Maybe that's my coping mechanism in general in life, but it worked for me.
But it's, I think it's the most important part. Maybe it's the most important part that it works. Then you will see.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
And to finish, what are you writing about at the moment? Are you writing about something or starting to write something new?
Yeah. I'm happiest when I'm writing a novel. So I'm almost always working on something. And so right now I'm working on my 9th novel, I think. But this might take a while. I'm going to take my time. I'm not going to tell you what it is about because I'm afraid to jinx it. So I'm always afraid to tell other people about what I'm writing until it's almost finished. So my girlfriend doesn't even know. She always wants to know, and I never tell her. But I'm always happiest when I'm in the middle of the book. So some writers, they say, oh, I'm happiest when I start because everything is possible. But I'm actually miserable when I start because I need my outline and I don't know where I'm going. And I don't like the beginning. I like the middle because it's not coming out in a while. You still like what you're doing. You're not stressed yet. You know, when you read back, you might go, oh, no, this is all bollocks. So I'm in the middle of something, and it's a very nice space to be in.
Okay, so I hope we French readers will have the luck to discover it after discovering this one published by the very nice Le Bruit du Monde in Marseille.
Oui. Yeah.
It's okay. It's back. So thank you very much for this interview.
Thank you.